Welcome to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. My name is Dan Yassin. I am an anti-war and anti-empire activist. Mike Rose is at the controls. Every third Wednesday from 3 to 3:30 p.m., I interview authors, scholars, bloggers, columnists, and activists who help us look at our world through the prism of American imperialism. On the show, we talk about U.S. foreign and domestic policies and the actions of the military-industrial congressional complex. These actions have severe consequences not only for the American people, but also for the people in other countries. To create a better, humane, and a compassionate world, we must first understand what is being done in our name, and we must always be willing to stand up, speak out, and speak truth to empire. Today we have Ray McGovern on telephone with us. Hello, Ray.
Hello, Dan.
Thank you for being my guest on the show. Ray McGovern grew up in Bronx in the early 60s. He served as an Army Infantry Intelligence Officer, and then he was a CIA analyst for 27 years, from the administration of John F. Kennedy to that of George H.W. Bush. His duties included chairing national intelligence estimates and preparing the president's daily brief, which he briefed one-on-one to President Ronald Reagan's five most senior national security advisors from 1981 to 1985. McGovern's post-retirement work includes commentating on intelligence issues, and in 2003, co-founding Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. His commentaries appear on his website, www.raymcgovern.com, and on www.consortiumnews.com. Ray has appeared on the NewsHour, C-SPAN's Washington Journal, CNN, BBC, a number of domestic Russian TV channels, Al Jazeera, RT, Press TV, CCTV, and many other TV and radio programs and documentaries. Ray's favorite gig was debating Iraq with yellow cake, aluminum connoisseur, and ex-CIA director James Woolsey on Charlie Rose on August 20th, 2004. Ray is fluent in Russian, German, and Spanish. Ray, it's an honor to have you on the show.
Thank you, Dan. Good to be with you.
Thank you. I'd like us to talk about the escalating tensions between the U.S. and Russia, which is moving us towards a nuclear war. One would think it would be covered by the mainstream media and discussed in the presidential debates, but it is not. Why is that?
Well, Dan, it's just accepted as flat fact, as they say in journalist circles, just as the presence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq were addressed or assumed to be flat fact. Russia has been painted out to be very, very bad. Putin, the devil incarnate. Putin, very bad. Sometimes have no shirt on, sometimes ride a horse with no shirt on. Bad, bad, bad Putin. Putin invade Ukraine. Putin do all manner of terrible things. And most of it is not true. And Americans they're not really able, as the old Russians that I used to analyze, they're not really able to read between the lines because there's nothing there. It's all pure propaganda. I guess what I need to say at this point is that I've been here in Washington for 50 years, so I've seen a lot of change. But there's one change that dwarfs all the other changes in significance, and that is that we no longer have, in any real sense, a free media. That is big. That could not be emphasized too much, and it's that kind of domesticated media that can get you into a war, and in this case, a war with another nuclear power, and God knows how that would end.
You recently wrote an article, Russia Baiting and Risks of Nuclear War. You compared the ongoing propaganda exchange between the U.S. and Russia over the shooting of Malaysian flight MH17 with the shooting of Korean flight 007 in 1983. Give us an overview of the two situations.
Well, despite all the claims, first and foremost by Secretary of State John Kerry, that it was certainly the Russians or the pro-Russian separatists, Russian missile, Russian, that downed the MH17 flight, the Malaysian flight over Ukraine, there has been no convincing evidence adduced. Now, this is quite remarkable. John Kerry tends to go off very strong without having amassed real evidence. In this case, he appeared on the 20th of July, 2014, 3 days after the shootdown, and he said, we have imagery, we have the telemetry, we know when the missile was shot, we know that the plane disappeared as soon as impact. We have all that information. We have the trajectory of the missile. Well, that sounds pretty conclusive, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be really nice if he shared that information with the rest of the world, or if only with the Dutch, who are supposed to be running an investigation of all this. He has been unwilling to share that. And the supposition, you know, I don't have to be a prosecutor. I'm an intelligence analyst. The only explanation for his unwillingness to share what he claimed to have is that, like so many prior incidents, John Kerry was lying. He does not have that information. There is a lot of information suggesting that, yes, it was a Russian missile, but that's what the Ukrainian army has, Russian missiles. So my bet is that by process of elimination, if Kerry won't come up with the evidence, he doesn't have it. And where that leaves us, God knows. But for him to advertise that social media is what he's relying on in addition to this other evidence that he won't disclose. And, you know, right off the bat he said, you know, social media is an extraordinary tool. Well, right. Anyone who knows anything about social media knows how easily it can be manipulated. And so it's the question is, an extraordinary tool for what? And we've seen so many bogus judgments traced to social media, not only in Ukraine, but also in Syria, that, a useful tool for whoever wants to use it, bridge it, fix it up, and make it look like the bad guys did all this. And Secretary Kerry is not all that reliable, and that's really hard to say about a Secretary of State, because, you know, when they lie, it should be a diplomatic sort of fudging, not an outright out-and-out untruth.
Tell us about what had happened in 1983, and you did the comparison in your article about situations.
Well, you know, as soon as I heard on the 17th of July, 2014, that a plane had been shot down with, in this case, was 298 people killed, I was thinking back to 1983 when another passenger airliner, this one was a Korean Airlines, KAL-007, was shot down over Siberia. I think the number of killed there were something like 269. Now, the evidence about who shot down KAL-007 on the 1st of September 1983, the evidence was pretty clear. We knew that the Russians shot it down. We also knew that it had flown a flight path very similar to a U.S. spy plane that had been in the area not long before, and that that flight plan brought it over the most sensitive Soviet military installations in Kamchatka and Sakhalin. We know it was deep into Soviet territory. We know that the pilot signaled the plane to take cognizance and land, that the plane did not respond. We know that the pilot shot warning shots. We knew all that from intercepted communications, control tower to pilot on the Russian side. Now, when there was no response, that plane was shot down. Now, the question was, did the Russians deliberately shoot down a passenger plane? And the answer to that was no. But what the United States did in that instance was doctor the transcript of this intercept down from 50 minutes down to 8.5 minutes. And the transcript that was shown or listened to at the UN Security Council was doctored in such a way to get out all the information that showed that this was just one horrendous mistake. In other words, the propaganda bullhorn was so loud that you saw on the, you know, cover of Time magazine, "Murder in the Sky." Mm-hmm. Now, Americans, most of them are not sophisticated enough to say, to distinguish between, yes, the Russians shot this plane down over its territory, and the fact that they may have made a mistake in doing that. This was clearly a mistake. We saw that from the intercepts. And how do I know all that? Well, I'm not divulging any secrets. The fellow in the State Department, this is really interesting. What was his name now? I'll remember it in a second. He was head of the video TV department. And what he did was prepare what he was given for showing and hearing at the UN Security Council. Later he learned that he was given just 8.5 minutes of this 50-minute conversation. And when he heard the whole thing, he realized that this was a terrible mistake on the part of the Russians. They did not intend to shoot down a passenger plane. They intended to shoot down a spy plane that was not responding to all kinds of warnings. So what did he do? Well, he wrote a book. Yeah, the book is called something like Deceit in the Sky, okay? And, you know, rather than being really sorry about all this, rather than being contrite about this and misinforming the whole world, his conclusion was this, and this is a direct quote. "Moral of this story is that both our own country and other countries, we all lie when it suits our policies. The advantage goes to whomever lies first," period, end quote. So everyone still believes that the Russians shut that down deliberately. It was a propaganda coup. And worse still, the Russians, knowing what we had done, knowing that we had deliberately deceived the whole world into making them out to be ogres, well, they were on high alert as to what else we might do. And just 2 months later, in November of 1983, we almost had a nuclear war. Why? Well, it's a long story, but our military mounted such reality-based exercises that the Russians went to their highest alert, and if it weren't for my colleagues at the CIA, went down and told President Reagan, "Look, the Russians think we're going to attack them. Please stop the exercise." That Reagan relented, stopped the exercise. So what I'm saying here is that when you give another country, a powerful country like Russia, to believe that you're going to drag it through the mud, that you can deliberately falsify propaganda or falsify the facts into propaganda, making them out, as we have been doing with Putin and the rest of them, to be, you know, the worst people in the world, then they go on high alert. And who's to say that one of these crazy generals that we have, there's a fellow that headed up NATO until a year ago, his name was Breedlove, okay? Breedlove, Air Force General, head of NATO, okay? Now, we know from his emails that have been divulged, that he was working behind Obama's back to try to start a war in Ukraine. He lied about the Soviet invasion of Ukraine. He came up with, quote, intelligence, end quote, that no one else had. So This is a real concern to the Russians. Obama may be the nicest fellow in the world, but if he's got a Pentagon that is insubordinate, and there's lots of evidence of that, then he's got a problem, and the whole world has a problem, because under our system, as one should appreciate, the military is supposed to be under the civilian leadership. Obama has not shown that kind of leadership.
You are listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. We are speaking with Dre McGovern, political activist and commentator on intelligence issues. In your recent article, Russia reads U.S. bluster as sign of war. You have covered some of that stuff already, but in that article you had talked about your job as CIA analyst during Reagan administration when you were presenting President's Daily Brief. So if you would be doing the same job today, what message would you be delivering to Obama and his advisors?
Well, that was an interesting exercise on my part. I put myself under my old hat as presidential briefer, and 2 days ago I came up with a President's Daily Brief item, which said, "Mr. President, you should realize that what the New York Times and the Washington Post and other mainstream media, so-called, are deliberately de-emphasizing or totally ignoring is something you need to know. And first and foremost among that is that the Russians blame the United States Air Force for violating the ceasefire so painstakingly worked out by John Kerry, our Secretary of State, and Sergei Lavrov, the Foreign Minister of Russia. That was worked out to go into effect on the 12th of September. 5 days later, United States Air Force and some of our coalition partners, including Britain and Australia and Denmark, bombed the hell out of a known Syrian army position, not a fluid position. These people had been in the same site for months, and killed anywhere between 63 and 83. We see two different figures for that. Syrian troops wounding over 100 others. Well, the ceasefire was not going to persist under those conditions, and that's one reason why it fell apart. So what did the Russians do? Well, they were miffed, okay? Miffed, I think, is a light word to use in this connection. And they said, look, Mr. Obama, we, and they did this in the form of the Ministry of Defense announcement, we have very sophisticated air defense missile systems in Syria. Mr. Obama, please realize that we are going to shoot down any unidentified objects flying in the air over Syria, whether they're missiles, whether they're in the aircraft, whatever. We're going to shoot them down, okay? So please realize that that's our intention. And by the way, we have the capability of shooting down what is called a stealth aircraft. In other words, aircraft that usually don't give much, if any, of a radar image. We're going to shoot them down too, Mr. President. So just be aware of all that. Whoa! At the same time, Lavrov, the foreign minister, finished a very long interview with Russia's prime TV channel by saying, sometimes diplomacy has to take a back seat to our Air Force, our Army, and our Navy. Now, that's the foreign minister speaking. So that's why I put pen to paper, so to speak, or fingers to keyboard, and wrote what I called a President's Daily Brief, or the equivalent. I told Mr. Obama, you should realize this because you're not seeing it in the media, and please be aware that the Russians are serious here. This is an escalation, and if the United States Air Force decides to maybe do a little test, you know, like, so they think they can knock down our stealth aircraft, huh? Oh, we'll show them a thing or two. You know, in the typical cowboy spirit of these Air Force guys, if they do that, Mr. President, you're going to be in a war with Russia. Now, I'm not sure that President Obama ever got my ersatz PDB, but what I am happy about is recent indications that renewed negotiations can begin again, not only between Russia and the United States, but including countries like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and even Iran. So it may be that the United States and Russia are stepping back from the brink here, neither of them really wanting to be involved in direct hostilities one with the other. And I think the Europeans are playing a salutary role here, because I know that both Obama and President Putin have been talking to the likes of German Chancellor Merkel and French President Hollande. So we'll have to see how this works out. But the main fly in the ointment is this. The United States has been supporting, via the CIA and by our own Defense Department, what we call moderate rebels, people who we have armed and trained and want to be a factor when the United States hopes Assad finally gives up, which, by the way, he isn't going to, mark my words. Okay. Mm-hmm. So these are called moderate rebels. Now, the President of the United States, Barack Obama, in an open televised interview with Tom Friedman, a journalist with the New York Times, said 2 years ago, moderate rebels? That's a fantasy. The president's word, a fantasy. Okay. Now, that was 2 years ago. Somehow or other, this fantasy, these moderate rebels, have sort of come out of the tomb like Lazarus for a renewed life, resurrected into a fighting force again. What does Assad call them? Well, in a big interview with a Danish newspaper just 3 days ago, he called the moderates unicorns. He said that they're just as real as unicorns. Okay, why am I saying all this? Well, because these so-called unicorns or moderates, let's say 100 of them still exist, they can only exist by being intimately interwoven with a real terrorist group called al-Nusra. Al-Nusra, recognized by the UN, by the United States, by Russia, as being a bona fide bad guy terrorist group. And so Kerry has been under this ceasefire accord that went into effect on the 12th of September, was negotiated on the 9th. Kerry undertook that the good guys, the white hats, the moderate rebels, would separate themselves from al-Nusra. Now, that's really hard to do because because there are so few of them and because they're so interwoven. During this time, when the agreement was worked out in September, I dug out a statement from Kerry, and when he was asked, well, how are you going to separate out the good guys, the moderates, you know, the unicorns, how are you going to separate them out from al-Nusra? And he said, quote, the United States has some refined ways to do this separation. Quote, as they separate, or as we work to know better exactly who's where, there are refined ways that we can have to actually make sure we're taking on al-Nusra and not taking on the good guys, not taking on what he called the legitimate opposition. Well, this legitimate opposition is what the President of the United States 2 years ago called fantasy, what 2 days ago Bashar al-Assad, the president of Syria, called unicorns, and that's the fly in the ointment. The United States can't recognize the fact that they're all bad guys, okay? They're all rebels. And if they don't leave the part of Aleppo, where they have pretty much taken hostage 250,000 people, if they don't leave, they're even able to leave with their arms, people have said. If they don't leave, well, they bear the onus for being cleaned out in a way that will also harm civilians. Nobody wants civilians to be harmed, but that's what's going to happen unless and until the United States can make good on its promise to say, okay, they're all bad guys. We'll separate the five or six moderates out, and then we'll have at both of us will have out al-Nusra as well as ISIS, because those are the real terrorists, and we share a common objective to get rid of those terrorists. Now, last thing I'll say on this is that the Russians have far more skin in the game than the United States. I mean, if you just look at a globe, all right, you can see that we have an ocean between us and then the Mediterranean Sea. So we're pretty far removed from these bad terrorists. How about the Russians? Not so. The Russians have a real problem with Islamic fundamentalism. Look what happened in Chechnya a decade ago. So these 3,000 Russians, dissidents, Central Asian people, who are fighting, being equipped and trained and getting practical experience fighting in Syria, they're going to come back to Russia. And that's one incentive that Putin has, a big incentive to stop this, that the United States does not share.
A couple of minutes we have. Ray, just give us a brief overview of you are part of a citizen diplomat team with its what is called Center for Citizen Initiative, and you visited some Russian cities, talked to Russian citizens. So tell us about it, what they think the people, I mean, how better informed they are, and what do they think of the U.S. and the American people, and their opinion of Putin. What do they think of that?
Yeah. Well, the great sorrow is that so few Americans know what Russia is like and know what the Russians are like. They're very much like us. They labored under terrible conditions under the communist regime. I was there. I was stationed at the embassy in 1972. There's no resemblance between 1972 and now. They're concerned about their everyday tasks. They don't want to spend as much as we do on defense, and so they don't. And our citizen-to-citizen contacts were extremely warm.
We have only half a minute.
Reassuring.
Half a minute.
Yeah. And, you know, we did all kinds of things, including we orchestrated a swim for freedom and peace in the Black Sea in Yalta. So it was a very uplifting experience. The Center for Citizens Initiatives has been doing this for decades, and I applaud their running these trips to Russia every year.
Thank you so much, Ray, for being my guest on the show. Until next time.
You're most welcome, Dan. Bye now.
You have been listening to Speaking Truth to Empire on 88.1 KFCF Free Speech Radio for Central California. We were speaking with Ray McGovern, political activist and commentator on intelligence issues. I'll be back third Wednesday of next month on Speaking Truth to Empire. Thank you for listening.